KBOO is currently running a Kickstarter campaign to build a city of media makers. From February 8th to March 9th, you can become a media maker and help spread the word. Just go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter between now and March 9th to join.
Bye. That's it for Station Studio. Thanks to engineer Judy Feistel. I'll have the show online later today at stationstudio.org and kboo.fm/stationstudio, as well as the podcast on iTunes. Also like us on facebook.com/stage_studio or tweet me at @stage_studio. Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts.
Oh, I'm beginning to think that man has never found the words that could make you want me, that have the right amount of letters, just the right sound, that could make you hear, make you see that you were driving me out of my mind.
Good morning. Coming up next is Radio Zine, features Bill Resnick in conversation with PQ's co-founder Larry Kleinman, discussing the debate that begins today in the U.S. Senate around immigration. But first, these announcements.
Help us help you keep Portland weird. Join Contessa de la Luna of the World Famous Confessional for the 6th annual Contessa de la Luna Valentine's Spectacular and Fashion Show. We're giving away a $100 cash prize plus live performances by Contessa de la Luna. Get your weird on and bring a date. Advance tickets available at Brown Paper Tickets. All proceeds benefit your community radio station, KBOO. That's Thursday, February 15th, 7 to 9:45 p.m. Feel the love of your other Contessa de la Lunatics. Contessa de la Luna's Valentine's Spectacular, Thursday, February 15th at the Clinton Street Theater, 7 p.m.
This is KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director Zella Zellis Marchand. KBOO builds a city of media makers so that you can empower forces for positive change like the Me Too movement, so that you can say Black Lives Matter, and have a place to proclaim that love knows no gender, race, or creed. In donating to KBOO, you are taking action and making history by funding broadcasts that not only keep you informed, but are informing the next generation. Here's what some of our listeners are saying. From Ron F., a longtime KBOO member, I was able to catch about 45 minutes of your broadcast, and the second I heard it, all of me got stopped. The sound was thrilling, and it kept being thrilling. And when the next piece came on, it was also thrilling. What you were doing reached all the way down. I felt woke up and alive. From an anonymous KBOO supporter, I'm a longtime KBOO supporter. Thank you for being the only real radio station. From Joe Becker, a disaster prep specialist and guest, thank you for the chance to share and for shepherding me through the process of being live on KBOO and making me as comfortable as possible. And from local grassroots organization Asians for Black Lives, thank you for having us on the evening news. We appreciate your support and for the opportunity to amplify our message. Join us on Kickstarter today. Look us up. Search for Help KBOO Build a City of Media Makers, and thank you for your support of KBOO.
Could have had a chance to get out of this rut. The time that you came and the day that you left. Could have had a chance.
Hi, folks. Bill Resnick here with Larry Kleinman. We're going to be talking about the great immigration struggle now expressing itself in Washington, D.C., unprecedented debate in the Senate about immigration policy. It may even have some good consequences. What's your 50-50, Larry, or what's your estimate?
Since we're not in Las Vegas, I'm not a betting man, Bill. But it's good to be with you. Thanks for having
okay.
me.
Okay. No, there's now an introduction to you. Larry Kleinman co-founded PQ'n, Oregon's Farm Workers Union, an educational center and social service agency and a radio station, and in fact has a large segment of farm worker housing in Woodburn. He served for 25 years as Secretary Treasurer of Pekun. He led the transition in Pekun to many young leaders. He's still working, though, with Jaime Arondo, his successor. Larry now splits his time for several years between Washington, D.C. and Woodburn, where he consults on building Hispanic power and protection and helping immigrant communities. So, Larry, today the Senate's going to be talking about immigration policy. First, though, tell us about your years in organizing in D.C. and across the country and what you're doing now. Then we can talk about this great struggle.
Well, I think the nexus is that the expression of struggle we're seeing in the Capitol, the halls of the Capitol, where we see unprecedented numbers of young people, young immigrants, undocumented immigrants, immigrants with DACA status, their allies, massing day after day, week after week to pressure for the right thing, is a culmination of years of organization building and community-based organizing across the country.
In some ways, they've led the struggle, but of course, the struggle is larger than that, even 1.8 million that they're talking about, in some ways permitting to stay in the country with protection and some security and able to work and a path to citizenship, which is a lot of people. But there's another, whatever it is, 12 million people who are still under attack. You've been working with the entire Hispanic community to help protect them and also find a way that they can lead decent lives in America, particularly because of what they came from, which was the American destruction of Central America and the Mexican state and Mexican farming. We really should see that we're responsible for the immigration. The people come here in desperation.
That would be a sea change. And precisely for that reason, we are where we are. I just want to point out, though, that the work that I've been involved in and that the movement, the network of organizations, is pan-ethnic. It is largely Latino because the immigrant population of this country is largely Latino. But it's not only Latino. It's African. It's Korean. There are other ethnicities that make themselves heard, and it reminds us that it's not a monolithic immigrant community. And it is true that the struggle for legal status has been going on in a sustained way since 2000, in one form or another, set back by 9/11, by the economic crash of the 2008-2009 period, but we have been in a constant struggle to win legal status for 11 million people for now 18 years.
Yeah. In fact, almost right from the beginning of the Republic, there have been what we would call now right-wing forces, nativist forces, who in fact are ready to kill people for a white America. In so many ways, they've... It's not only slavery and the extermination of Native Americans, but there have been bills throughout the to restrict immigration and to force people out. In fact, there was a huge deportation of Mexican immigrants. When was it? During the Depression?
Well, in the 30s and again in the 50s, yeah. Major operations. In the 70s when we started, there was the Reign of Terror, which is really why we started the Willamette Valley Immigration Project 40-plus years ago, was to respond to that on a community level and using legal and litigation strategies. Many of the folks today who consider themselves endurably white were not, their ancestors were not considered white when they arrived. The Irish are a great example. They were considered to be something else. So whiteness in America has always been a moving target. The fact that the more recent waves of immigrants are people of color has made the resistance that much more fierce.
Right. Well, in the beginning, Jews and Italians were also seen as, in fact, even some Scandinavians were seen as people of color if they're of the wrong religion.
Or at least not
white. Or Catholics,
which is,
yes, they were not white, yes.
And so those are, I mean, they're obviously, and we can talk specifically about what's happening and being debated in the Senate today, but that is a very important backdrop that you lift up about, you know, what is the, because the sort of xenophobic forces, the anti-immigrant forces, the forces that want to favor European, white, educated folks are definitely pushing the envelope as far as they can because they realize they have either an ally or a true believer or maybe some of both in the White House.
Let's talk about, this is Bill Resnick for KABU Radio today, talking to Larry Kleinman, one of the founders of PICUN and now a national figure and organizer. We've been talking about, for the last few minutes, the sort of history of these nativist, anti-immigrant, anti-people of color struggles. Let's talk about how the expression of that today. We have a right-wing government, and they're doing what they've done for 150 years.
One thing that's really, I find both flooring and alarming about the administration we have is it is basically a free agent administration. In the past, we've had administrations that were repressive, but they tried to live, they at least tried to look like they were living within the strictures of law, of constitution. And we now have an administration, we have an attorney general, we have a president, we have a president's advisors, whose attitude essentially is stop me if you can. And that means going to the courts, using whatever legislative leverage one can find. And this is important, Bill, because even assuming that the Senate passes something this week, even assuming something passes the House, even assuming that President Trump signs a bill, the guarantee that we all assume is behind that, that whatever is passed will be implemented in good faith, does not hold and cannot be an assumption on our part.
Yeah, the ICE in particular, that is a bureau and part of Homeland Security. In particular, they, in fact, are pushing their agenda of, as we talked about recently, of frightening to death immigrants and trying to force them, in the Mitt Romney phrase, self-deportation.
Right, to which I would now add, so that self-deportation, because they realize they don't have the capacity to begin to round up 11 million people. Nor do they have the political will, frankly. But they can scare a lot of people into leaving. And now there's a new thing I would add to that, Bill, which is self-detention, which is don't go to work, don't file an application that you are otherwise legally permitted to file for your family member, right?
Certainly don't and complain about your boss not paying you.
That's right. So it's a self-censorship, self-containment, as well as self-deportation. Brought about by what I call the war on adjudications, the second wall, as we call it, barriers to becoming a citizen, barriers to filing for your family member. So this is the point I want to make about even if the more than likely the Senate debate will break down and nothing will emerge from it. We can talk about the specifics of that in a minute, I suppose. But even if something does, the idea that it'll be implemented in a way that is at least even-handed with respect to immigrant applicants is questionable.
This is KABU Radio. Bill Resnick here talking to Larry Kleinman, who has served the last several years in both Woodburn for PICUN and as a organizer of the national struggle for immigration, quote, reform, that is, for changing what's going on quite radically. Larry, let's talk about what's happening in the Senate and House. It's not inconceivable that they will, in fact, legalize, they will protect DACA people and give them a path to citizenship and allow them to work or go to school and enjoy the very limited rights of American citizens if you don't have a lot of money. Which is way better than what they're facing now. Tell us about what's going on in the Senate.
Well, so the folks following what happened around the budget saw that in the outcome of the brief government shutdown a few weeks ago, Schumer was able to wrangle out of McConnell the promise to have an open debate about what to do about DACA, what to do about the Dreamers. And that now, McConnell is now fulfilling his pledge to have exactly that debate. The debate started last night. This is as of Monday, the 12th of February. Today is the 13th, of course. It's going to go all week. And basically, the first bill that can get 60 votes to beat a filibuster will move forward. The chances right now are probably about even, as you said earlier, that something will happen, that something will get 60 votes. But I got to say that the path looks a lot tougher in the House. And the reason for that is there's an extreme right wing in the House that has enough votes in within the Republican caucus to block something from being Republican only. And then there are there's a strong left element in the House, in the Democratic caucus, that says we will not fund, you know, more enforcement. So how do you, and it's even questionable whether Speaker Ryan will put a bill on the floor. He was not part of any of that deal made between Schumer and McConnell.
Right.
And then on top of that, even if they put something through, will, you know, and it lands on Trump's desk, it would be the first test of will he actually sign something or not? And, right, who knows, right? It's all, so we're dealing with multiple levels of uncertainty.
On the other hand, struggle from below is what's necessary to force any decision that we would, any outcome that we would favor. And the outcomes are not, none of them are going to be what we would want, but some of them might be worth fighting, are worth fighting for, it seems to me. Why don't you tell us what the, you know, there's some terrible ones. Why don't you tell us, let's start with the really dreadful stuff that has to be in some ways eliminated.
Well, so first, the United We Dream and Allies, the largest organization of Dreamers, has demanded what's called a Clean Dream Act, which is vote on the Dream Act. The Dream Act has been in Congress now, introduced for, I don't know, 15 years. It got a vote in the lame duck session in 2010 and failed. It passed the House, but failed in the Senate by a few handful of votes. Anyway, that's been their demand. The White House, led by its domestic policy director, Stephen Miller, who is an acolyte of Jeff Sessions, came out with a four-pillar program. Okay, they said, okay, we'll give you status, a path to citizenship, a long and torturous one, but we'll give you that for 1.8 Dreamers as an estimate. But what we want in return is $25 billion to build the wall and other enforcement. And then we want two huge adjustments to the legal immigration system. We want you to do away with what's called the diversity visas, which has allowed for more equitable representation from, mostly from Africa, and it's about 50,000 visas a year. And more consequentially, numerically speaking, we want to get rid of up to half of the annual immigration of family members by eliminating entire categories of who can immigrate. And this would have an effect of, over time, a half a million people a year fewer, 50% cut in the legal immigration flow into the United States indefinitely, right? Mm-hmm. At a time when...
Well, indefinitely until the law has changed. Now, immigration laws have been this great political football.
But they really aren't changed very often, actually.
No, not very often.
And because they are the political football,
right. It takes a strong liberal majority to change them. But it's happened.
Or a strong conservative force,
majority,
like Newt Gingrich had, that forced Bill or pressured Bill Clinton to sign the worst immigration bill in four decades in the middle 90s, which is we're dealing with the effects of now.
Right. So we do, it's important to stop that the limitation on immigration, and particularly the family reunification part, which would... It would be quite terrible for a lot of people, actually, and force them to, in fact, go back home is another thing that they're, if they can accumulate a little bit of, get a decent job.
Well, what they're saying they want to do is say you can only apply for your spouse or your child. Can't apply for your parents, can't apply for your siblings, right? That's the big fissure.
Uh-huh. Let's talk about what what could be won and maybe should be fought for, and perhaps a compromise might be okay. For example, I'm not so, well, maybe, why don't we talk about the wall for a second? It's $20 billion, now $26 billion. It'll probably wind up to be like military contracts, $80 billion, $100 billion, whatever they, it's, they always explode when they begin doing it. It seems to me, though, they've just passed the budget giving $160 billion more to the military. That's already the biggest in the world. Not only that, it's bigger than the next 10 militaries combined. But we're still insecure, Larry, and they have to be strengthened. Anyway, It seems to me that the $20 billion wall is a white elephant. Is it going to be worse than a white elephant? Is it just, it's great for concrete people and steel people and the people who erect these sorts of things. It's a huge boon to them. Will it have any real effect on immigration, just putting up this vast structure?
First of all, it's never going to happen. And secondly, the answer is no, it won't have any real effect. It'll have much more impact on local economy and local ecology than it ever will on immigration, because most of the smuggling that goes on, whether it's goods or people, is through the ports of entry. Not under in tunnels and not over the wall with a whatever size ladder that's 1 foot higher, right? That's not how it happens, right? And everybody knows that. You expand the Border Patrol suddenly, you hire a bunch of unqualified people. Guess what the cartels do? They infiltrate the Border Patrol so that their guy standing at the port of entry simply wave through the vans full of people at the indicated hour.
Do they have the money to be able to hire those?
That's part of the $25 billion. That's the other thing. The wall is not going to cost any. They're not going to spend $25 billion on a wall.
No.
They're going to spend some pittance of it on certain places. And there's hundreds of miles that already have wall, right?
Right.
The most consequential places geographically or geopolitically. In any event, it's all the wall, as well we all can imagine, is a complete. It's a complete Trojan horse for a bunch of other enforcement, interior enforcement, border enforcement, physical barriers, more jails, et cetera.
Right. They're the people. And in fact, it's the expansion of Homeland Security and the entire army and the entire set of suppression agencies of many kinds in the United States now that is truly frightening.
And that's what this is a part
of. Domestic police, of the army, of surveillance as well as surveillance possibilities. We really are on the way of possible sort of military corporate not just dominance in politics, but them running the state. It's a possibility, especially in a time of crisis.
So I think in the debate right now, the it seems to me that some of the Democrats, Schumer in particular, has signaled, we will, as much as we hate the idea of the wall, as much as we hate the fact of the wall, as much as we hate wasting money on enforcement that they think is completely unnecessary, and we're afraid of the dangers you just articulated, nonetheless, some of us will entertain the idea that we can waste, tens of billions of dollars in exchange for status for the Dreamers. It's like a hostage situation and you're paying a ransom. And that's what they've sort of gotten themselves to. So the big issue now is, will any changes to the legal immigration system be countenanced? And there might be some that actually do rearrange some application of visas to clear out the backlog, which is 4 million people long, although there aren't actually that many live applicants, I don't believe, anymore. But there are many, hundreds of thousands, millions. So there may be some apportionment of those visas. But the idea of lowering immigration in the dramatic way that the right wants to do is a non-starter. And if that's where the Senate Republicans dig in and the House Republicans dig in and President Trump digs in, nothing happens. Meanwhile,
do you think the Democrats will stay firm against all those various adjustments?
I do think so. And the March 5th, I just want to say quickly, the March 5th deadline that folks talk about regarding DACA, that's when the executive order expires. But as a practical matter, nothing happens on March 5th as of now, because a judge in San Francisco about 3 weeks ago issued a national injunction requiring USCIS, the service arm of immigration, to continue to extend the permits of DACA holders. And that will remain in effect as a practical matter until at least June, assuming the Supreme Court gets involved. We'll know that soon. In any event, everybody inside the Beltway understands, that's following this issue, understands that the pressure really isn't on for March 5th in the way that people are saying that it is, though the issue of resolving this once and for all is critical.
It probably will drag on for a while, and then the closer it gets to the election. The Republicans are afraid of the Hispanic vote. Like, I think it was the election of Obama, tell me if that's right.
Mm-hmm.
They were so outvoted in Hispanic areas and a growing population. It was the year, I think, that there were more Hispanics in the United States than blacks. I believe that was in that period. It was clear that the Hispanic vote is going to become more and more important. They were talking about actually doing something sort of liberal and trying to reach out to Hispanics. Is there anything left of that?
You know, ashes? Trump and his, from the very first day of his candidacy, almost 2 years ago now, or 3 years ago, excuse me, blew that away and continues to reinforce that wound again and again and again. So even if
Trump,
something happens.
Trump drowns, but the others, I think, sort of recognize maybe we should make a deal now. Are they smart enough to do that? They're so afraid, though, of
their
base.
I don't
even
think they think a deal's going to save them, and they may be right about that.
No, but,
because the voter's going to say, well, are you with Trump? You're a Republican. You got an R next to your name. Are you with Trump or not? Right?
Yeah.
And so what does that Republican do, Bill? Does that Republican say, I'm not with Trump, I'm with you, the immigrant voters, and then his white, his white working class base that's Trump, or predominantly, that's pro-Trump, disowns him. Or he says, no, I'm with Trump, and then it's like, I don't care what you did for Dreamers, you know, you say you're with Trump.
Yeah, you know, Pete Wilson did terrible
exactly.
things to immigrants in California, and the Republican Party of California died.
The Republican candidate for governor this year, Bill, is going to run as an independent because
yes.
he will not be a top two finisher in their system. There would otherwise be no Republican candidate for governor. That's how far the Republican Party has slid in California.
Yeah, and it's that was a product of that
exactly.
immigration
That's
crackdown.
Right.
Whatever it was, 15 years ago.
25 years ago.
25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Larry, two final things. You were working several years ago, I recall, building a coalition of immigrant advocates and immigrant employers, particularly the farm people who were powerful in mm-hmm. in the U.S. Senate. You came very close to a decent immigration reform bill. Is that coalition, is that group, are the employer, the employers have a lot to lose in this. If they, in fact, what about E-Verify? If they, which, of course, they're not really, the tender sensibilities of the employers are very important to, of the big companies, are very important to Republicans. So they're not doing what they could do, in fact, to really destroy the lives of immigrants. By getting forcing employers to fire everybody who doesn't have, you know, right? But are they pushing? You know, we only have another 2 minutes. Why don't you talk about that for?
So they're trying, but their power has been eclipsed by Trump. You know, Trump has wielded a base that they can't control. He's whipped that base up into a xenophobic froth in places. And so their accustomed entitlement to that kind of power really is in jeopardy. One thing I just want to point out, this just happens to be happening today on this point. On the national executive director of a group called the National Immigration Forum, Ali Nirani, will be here in Portland to speak at Congregation Beth Israel, 7 p.m., 1972 Northwest Gleason.
Is that tonight?
Tonight. So if you hear this and you want to hear more about what is happening on the pro-immigration business, evangelical, and law enforcement side, he's a great person to hear.
And one last thing before we sign off. You've been in touch with the entire immigrant community and their advocates and the sanctuary movement in Oregon. Tell us the state of that and how people who want to get active, what do you suggest they think about?
I think the state is strong. There's a threat on the horizon, which is the anti-immigrants are running a ballot initiative, IP22. They just got $30,000 from national anti-immigrant forces to try to put Oregon's so-called sanctuary law, it's been in place for 30 years, to a vote this fall. So look, go to causaoregon.org and look for opportunities to get involved in that campaign. Mm-hmm. It's going to be critical.
And what about through the various sanctuary organizations in the KABU audience area? Of course, we're 20.
Well, the new sanctuary movement is active here in the city and in the state. So they're continuing to do their thing as needed. That's a situation where people, individual immigrants, seek sanctuary when they feel they need it. So I'm not quite in touch with the day-to-day on where that activity is at, but I think the biggest threat on the horizon is the IP22, which is this, which if they get the signatures, and we'll know that later in the year, we'll put this issue to a vote this fall.
Yeah, what about the cities who have in one way or another, agreed to sanctuary status, sometimes not by using the word, but pushing their police? Is that a struggle going on now still?
Well, I don't know if I would call it a struggle. However, there are multiple police agencies that say we will not accept what the law requires us to do because it does not befit our values and it does not further our mission of keeping our citizens safe. And Woodburn is one of those places.
Yeah, that's for sure. You might say why? Because when ICE does their thing and puts people and just begins grabbing people, no one is willing to even report horrible crimes against immigrant communities for fear of, and that by immigrants and by others,
exactly.
They are sitting targets for crime. And some of the police recognize when you...
Or they're not available to be witnesses for crimes that don't involve their community at all, perhaps.
Right.
They recognize that that's not conducive to public safety.
In fact, it's also true of health stuff. People won't go to the hospital with infectious diseases unless they absolutely have to.
So we have multiple police chiefs around the state that have taken that posture and taken it quite forcefully, which is a good thing.
Well, Larry, we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Bill.
The great debate goes and where the great
stay
struggle.
Stay tuned and to be continued.
Thanks a lot.
KBOO Radio trains media makers. We believe community resilience happens when citizens know how to make their own media. For the last 50 years, KBOO has trained thousands of citizen journalists to report on what goes on in the streets of Portland and far beyond. We know that, with our expertise and your support, we can keep this city activated and aware through radio. Invest in Portland's future media makers and join KBOO on Kickstarter today.